Welcome to The Productivity Show, the Asian Efficiency Podcast dedicated to helping you make the most of your time, attention, energy, and focus. You've probably heard the old adage, you are what you eat, but it applies to more than just your physical body. It applies to your mind as well. So in this episode, Brooks and I talk about mind food, an idea I picked up from author Tim Sanders on the importance of curating what information you allow your mind to feed on. We discuss why it's so important to watch what you're putting into your mind, explain how the right information can change your world and help you achieve your ideal future, and share the most influential books and podcasts that we personally include in our own information diets. You can find everything that we discussed in the show notes by going to theproductivityshow.com/170. And now, on with the show. All right, today we're talking about mind food, which is an idea that I picked up from author Tim Sanders. And with me to talk about mind food today is Brooks Duncan. How are you doing today, Brooks?
I'm excellent. How are you?
Awesome. Excited to talk about mind food, which is a little bit of an interesting idea. And I think that if you were to break this down, the average Asian Efficiency podcast listener or even blog reader would understand this conceptually. But when I read this in the book Today We Are Rich by Tim Sanders, he has a quote in there. He says, "Be as careful about what you put into your mind as you are about what you put into your mouth." That really hit me, even for somebody who's been focused on this sort of thing for quite a while. It just kind of crystallized for me that, yeah, I'm not going to just feed on candy bars. I don't drink soda. I don't do a lot of those things. I'm very careful about what I am putting into my body physically. But a lot of times when we're just scrolling through Facebook or Twitter, we don't have the filter applied. You know, we're just letting whoever happens to be there speak into our lives. And it got me thinking that that probably shouldn't be the case. You know, garbage in, garbage out, as the adage goes. And so we want to talk today a little bit about mind food and what your brain is feeding on.
Yeah, this is a great topic because, like you said, you don't really think of it. Even in the process of putting this episode together, I was kind of like looking through some of my mind food, and I was like, oh boy, there's some stuff here I really need to cut out because it's not doing me a lot of good. So if you're not intentionally thinking about it, you don't realize that it's the same.
Exactly. And just like with the physical junk food, you know, everything in moderation, it's okay to have a piece of cake or a dessert once in a while, but if you have it every single day, you're going to quickly get out of shape. And I think that we really need to be careful about our taking care of our brain, because the brain, especially for a lot of the Asian Efficiency audience, I believe, kind of falls into this category of knowledge worker, which is a little bit of a buzz term, I guess, that's often applied to millennials in general, but that's a very real thing. You know, I used to put in long hours at the office, and those long hours at the office a lot of times were easier than a 4-hour deep work session where I just feel exhausted at the end of it. And so we have to be careful about what we're putting into our brain, because we need our brain, especially for people who have a job like we do. Like, we have to be in top condition in order to perform, in order to bring value to the Asian Efficiency audience. We need to not have, stayed up late last night watching Game of Thrones and just showed up here and rolled out of bed and just recorded this. Like, there's got to be some thought, some preparation, some training in essence that goes into this in order to perform well. And I think that a lot of people, myself included, when I read this book, it was kind of a reality check for me, where it's kind of like, well, we don't see the physical ramifications of that when we look in the mirror, when we step on the scale. So it's almost like the effects aren't really there. And I think that's pretty dangerous.
Yeah, if you're like an athlete or something like that, you understand that keeping up on the latest training methods, training in the right way, that has a direct impact. Whereas if you're somebody who your job is creating ideas or leading people or synthesizing information, it's not quite as obvious as an athlete. And it's not something that It's not something that we're kind of trained on. We often don't have a coach sitting there, you know, telling us what to do. So we've got to make sure that we're the one curating this information.
Yeah, exactly. And I love how you brought up the idea of the athlete, because I guess what I was trying to say is that a lot of us are mental athletes now, and we need to take our training and our conditioning seriously if we want to add value to our organizations or advance in our careers. And the fact that you muscled through one day and survived it doesn't necessarily mean that you're in shape. you can do things if you're intentional, and you can put yourself in a position where it can be easier and you don't have to feel like you're dying at the end of the day.
Yep. But mainly what I got out of that is I'm going to tell my wife after this that I'm now officially an athlete.
That works. That works. So this whole idea of mind food, why is it so important? I think that it is really important because there's an insane amount of information that we're trying to keep up with in today's society. The too long didn't read version is that there's an insane amount of junk. In episode 161, we talked about the ridiculous amount of information that is available to us, and not to redo that episode, but just some statistics from there. You know, every second, there's approximately 6,000 tweets, more than 40,000 Google searches, more than 2 million emails sent. There's 4.58 billion web pages. So you can't read all the things. You can't listen to all the things. You have to pick and choose the things that you're going to let in. You have which things are going to make it past the perimeter that you're going to open the gates to. And if you just accept whatever is being broadcast, you're going to get a lot of noise. I know that's one of the things that we got feedback on when we were doing the Escape Your Email product, was this whole idea of signal versus noise. And some people were saying, well, I don't really get that. Really, the idea is that there's a whole bunch of information out there. That's the noise. It doesn't matter if you get it or not, but there's not very many frequencies that are the signal. Those are the things that you're looking for. Those are the things that can really add value. And it's very easy to miss out on the signal if you're not filtering out that noise, if you're not dialed in, if you're not tuned in to that specific frequency. Doesn't mean that that good stuff isn't out there, which is why it's kind of a shame, you know, whenever you see like, we're going to talk about in a little bit some of the best books and podcasts that we listen to. There's a lot of stuff out there that anybody has access to this stuff. And some of this stuff has been very influential. Some of this stuff honestly has changed my life. And it can be frustrating when you see like, hey, this book was really great and it opened my eyes to this specific thing and other people just don't get it. Well, it's not necessarily their fault. It's because they've got so much stuff coming at them and they haven't trained themselves to filter out all of that noise.
Yeah. And also, and not only is there a lot of noise too, but it's just human nature. You want to gravitate to the things that are easy. You want to gravitate to the things that are kind of entertaining and give you that dopamine hit, which is fun and great, but may not be the thing that's going to, as you say, change your life. So it takes a little bit of effort to seek that stuff out.
Yeah, absolutely. Katie beat me to one of the stats that I had in the outline here, which is that Jim Rohn said that you are the average of the five people that you spend the most time with. We're going to talk about that in a little bit. But I think that most people spend the most of their time with the people that they follow on Twitter or the people that they're friends with on Facebook. Facebook in particular, I really have a beef with, because the people that you are typically friends with in Facebook, because in Facebook you're adding somebody as a friend, they have to reciprocate. Those are typically people from your past. Whereas yep. Twitter is a one-way thing where I can follow Brooks even if he has no idea who I am, and I can see what he's saying and what he's sharing, and I can benefit from some of the stuff that he's distilling as he's feeding on some great mind food. But he doesn't have to personally know me in order for that to happen. And I guess just my story, where I came from, my situation, I've grown a lot over the last several years to the point where I don't want to be the same person that I was in high school. But a lot of those Facebook friends, like they're stuck living in that. They still are the person that they were in high school, and they haven't developed the desire to change and to grow, which is sad. But what's great about technology, I mean, the people who are in the dojo listening to this right now, the people who are listening to this after it's published, like, you get to choose which room you're going to be in and who you're going to allow speak into your life. But social media is just a whole bunch of stuff that's being fed to you from a fire hose. So you can't keep up to it. You can't keep up with all of it. But a lot of people try. They try to feed on this steady diet of information junk food. And the problem with social media, even if the people that you're following are legit, I think that the format of social media kind of sets it up for failure, because it makes it easy for everybody to be an expert. You know, Twitter is 140 characters, though I guess they expanded that recently for some people. but basically, reading a headline doesn't mean that you understand the situation and you're seeing it correctly. So you see people spouting off their opinions, and they, you know, because they read a headline, even though they didn't even click through to actually read the article. But that's the kind of stuff where you can see that and you're like, oh yeah, I know what's going on. Well, you don't really, you read a headline. And so we're going to talk about a little bit here why social media is not great for that. And then also some things that you can replace that with.
The first time I really noticed this phenomenon, and actually this is kind of before social media, but it was around the time of the O.J. Simpson trial, and this is making me look very old, I know, but all of a sudden, when the O.J. Simpson trial was going on, all of a sudden, everybody was a lawyer. Everybody was giving their opinion on, you know, what this witness said and what this means, and it's like, none of you actually know what you're talking about, and this is before social media, so now it's even worse. So yeah, I'm with you.
Exactly. And Heather is mentioning in the Slack channel that she's got a class reunion that she was thinking about going to, but then she realized that she doesn't really know these people now or in the past. So why use your precious time to go to a party with a bunch of strangers? Exactly. Especially when all of those strangers have, quote unquote, well-informed opinions about specific things. You know, back in the day, it used to just be, well, I don't know what's going on the other side of the world. I'll just talk about sports. And everybody's got their opinion on whether the coach should be fired or what play the football team should have ran on fourth and goal. And you can debate that, and everybody's kind of an armchair quarterback, but that's been applied to every single area you can imagine now with the dawn of social media. And also just like we constantly getting these the videos and pictures and things from all over the world. It's so easy to share information in an instant, but just because you've got one piece of information doesn't mean that, like I said, that you see the whole picture.
Yeah, I'm actually, before you go on, I'm glad you brought up the dojo. So if you're listening and you're not familiar, the dojo is our kind of private productivity community. And those type of communities, like for me, it's the dojo, but whatever that type of community is, there's a lot of really focused communities that are a great source of mind food. So if you want to kind of, we're going to talk about some other sources, but if you want to kind of look for really great content, a lot of times it's private communities like that are focused kind of around the topic. And I'm really glad that we're recording this live in the front of the dojo, which we do for most episodes, so that they can contribute, because I have a feeling there's going to be a lot of really great contributions in this episode.
Yeah, absolutely. And really what you're talking about is exactly why this next point, you know, less is more, why this is so important. Because if you can find a community, especially something like the dojo, I'll just use that as an example, because that's our community and I know it well. The dojo is not a free community, but that is because the dojo is designed to tune out all of the junk and focus on the stuff that can actually change your life. And there's enough people in the dojo who have shared that sort of thing, that, oh, I got this from this particular module, or I got this from what somebody said in the forum, and it just really helped me understand the situation better. It gave me that aha moment. Those aha moments, those are the things that can really change your life. Now, the other thing here that's worth unpacking is that those aha moments are typically not going to come from an opinionated tweet or even something like a blog post or Medium article. I think that podcasting is kind of a unique forum because there's a lot of stuff out there that can be entertaining, and you can kind of do it in the background. And then when somebody says something that really stands out to you, that can be the thing that kind of clicks. But otherwise, like, you can listen to podcasts when you're at the gym or doing chores or whatever. And I think that you can get aha moments from podcasts, which is why we're going to talk about those in a little bit. But I think the number one source of those aha moments, if you're really focused on them, is books. And there's some really eye-opening statistics that I found regarding how many people actually read books. According to the Pew Research Institute, 27% of adults did not read a single book last year. And I put in the show notes in my Buddy the Elf voice, that's shocking.
I wouldn't even be surprised if the real number is even higher than that. I think it's something that you see less and less of. My wife and I are both like very avid readers, so sometimes we forget that that's not actually a normal thing.
Yep. Yeah, you're right. And there's a Mark Twain quote, which I had a little bit down a little bit further here. He said that the man who doesn't read has no advantage over the man who can't. So I think that there's a lot of people who fall into that category that you're exactly right. They don't want to admit to it. They don't want to admit that they have no advantage over the person who can't read. So they're not going to lump themselves into that statistic of people who did not read a single book. But if you look at the people who are successful, another study, for example, said that the most successful CEOs read over 50 books per year. So you've got the average person who, over a quarter of them, can't find the time to read a single book. It's not that they can't, it's that they won't. But the people who are really successful are reading 50 books per year. So you can kind of connect the dots here. And you can, if you want to be successful, do what the successful people are doing. And Tom Corley, who's the author of Change Your Habits, Change Your Life, that's exactly what he was looking to do with this book, is just look at the habits of really successful people. He reported that 88% of financially successful people read at least 30 minutes per day. So again, we're connecting dots here, but I would say that the people who read are the people who get the ideas that allow them to change their perspective, allow them to see their situation differently, and take advantage of the opportunities that are in front of them.
Yeah, and it's something that you said here, which is that a lot of times these busy people, because you think what you said was the most successful CEOs read 50 plus books a year, and 88% of financially successful people read at least 30 minutes a day. A lot of successful CEOs I know are extremely busy and have very little quote unquote free time, but they recognize that this mind food is a priority, and so they make that time. And so that's a lot of times I feel like, I don't have time to read, but then, or at least that's what I used to think, but I structured it into, for me, it was my morning ritual to do this. And that's how I kind of structured it into my life. And so there always seems to be that correlation of people making the time.
Yeah, exactly. I know that we have a little bit of a privileged position at Asian Deficiency because there is this emphasis on personal growth. But you're exactly right. It's the people who prioritize this stuff that allows them to do everything better. It allows them to succeed both personally and professionally. And I think that specifically with my role at Asian Deficiency, I mean, I'm always trying to come up with new podcast ideas. I'm trying to come up with new videos and new blog content. And I get asked once in a while by people who are like, how can you consistently create? And to be honest, I have no trouble consistently creating as long as I am taking the time to consistently read and consistently get inputs. I'm always paying attention for those signals that are out there. And if I find myself in a position where I'm having trouble coming up with an idea, I realize that it's because for a while I've just been tuning out. And it's not that those signals aren't out there, it's that I've been watching Netflix or scrolling Facebook like a lot of other people and not even recognizing them, not understanding that those signals are being sent and not receiving them. But like you said, the CEOs, the successful people, they're the ones who are intentionally saying, no, I'm not going to let that noise and that junk in. Instead, I'm going to make sure that I'm creating time for the good stuff. And it's that good stuff that gives them the ideas that take them to the next level.
Yeah. And sometimes it's also about recognizing that good enough is better than perfect. And what I mean by that is, you know, we were saying that reading a book is better than often is better than an audiobook, which is often better than a podcast. And that's true. But if you're somebody in a situation where you just really like, you know, maybe you're, you're a single parent with a long commute or something like that, and you really just do not have the time to sit there with a physical book and read it, even if that's the ideal, well, maybe you can find an alternative. Maybe you can listen to an audiobook while you're commuting or something like that instead of listening to the radio. Or maybe you can carve out time another way. I know a guy named Roger Bennett, he's a co-host of a podcast called Men in Blazers. I listen to a sad amount of soccer-related podcasts. And but he's a massive reader. And he was asked that question, like, how the heck do you, with all the other stuff you do, how the heck do you... do you read all these books? And he says he lives in New York City. So he says he's always in the back of cabs and Ubers and stuff like that. So he gets in, out comes his book, and he kind of works in the reading whenever he can. There's a lot of times there's these small slices of time. It's just making the best of what you can do.
Yeah, that's a really great idea. And I think that kind of leads into, we'll kind of go a little bit out of order here, but since we're on this topic, and Heather's talking about this in the dojo as well. Heather says, you can't be creative if all your ideas and signals come out of your own head. This is absolutely true. And one of the points that I wrote down in the outline here is it's especially true if you're creative. And the question that I asked is, ever find yourself stuck in a creative rut? I know that I have been in that place. And every time that I'm there, I have to look at, like I said, what I've been putting in. And usually if I'm unhappy with what I'm getting out, it's because I have not been diligent or consistent in putting things in. Now, one of the books that I read, and this is not on my list, but this is a great book. And actually the author is in it. Indirectly on my list. That is Steal Like an Artist by Austin Kleon. This was a tipping point for me because in this book, Austin Kleon talks about how creating is not coming up with something completely original like Heather was talking about. And I used to think that it was. I used to think that because I'm a bit of a songwriter as well, I would write a song and I'd be happy with it until I heard whatever song I stole the chord progression from. And I'm like, oh my goodness, I can't create anything. And what Austin Kleon is telling me is that, you know, that's not necessarily bad. My song that I wrote, I did not actually steal that. I wasn't copying that person because creating is not coming up with something completely original. It's simply connecting the dots of your inputs in a way that they haven't been connected before. That's really freeing from a creative perspective because it means that all you have to do is increase the dots and then you've got a bigger toolbox to work with and you can draw the connections however you want. And really the end result is just the natural result of the inputs that you've put in. You don't have to, there's not this pressure to come up with something completely original because as long as you've been doing the work of developing the inputs and creating the dots in the first place, then however they connect, that's completely fine.
Yeah. And plus that chord progression that you quote unquote stole, I guarantee that came from another song that
exactly
that person heard. And like, you know, it goes all the way back. So yeah, it's just all creative stuff is that way for sure.
Yeah, Austin Kleon says in the book, the artist is a collector, not a hoarder, mind you. There's a difference. Hoarders collect indiscriminately. Artists collect selectively. They only collect things that they really love. And that's going to get into the next point that we'll talk about here for collecting good ideas. But there's a couple other quotes from this book that I want to just mention here because they're really good. He says that you are, in fact, a mashup of what you choose to let into your life, that you don't want to look like your heroes. You want to see like your heroes. That part, I think, is really important. And that's also why you can tell right away when somebody is just ripping something off or if somebody is inspired by something. So one example of this that I see all the time is I've actually recorded a podcast with Aaron Mankey, the podcaster behind Laura. I was on the Homework podcast many moons ago when it was him and Dave Kahlo. And Aaron Mankey's story is pretty cool because he was invested in this project and he just really liked this idea. And he spent a lot of time crafting this thing. And now it's one of the top podcasts on iTunes. And he's got a book deal and a TV show and all this stuff. And so, of course, now that he's getting successful, there are people coming out of the woodwork who are just blatantly ripping off his show and trying to create their own thing. And I follow him on Twitter and he mentions, you know, he highlights some of these sometimes. Some people he'll highlight because he'll say like, well, this person is really doing a cool thing. But often it's, hey, this person just blatantly copied my thing. Can you remove them from your podcast directory? So I want to point out that difference there. But the other quote here, which I believe Katie mentioned earlier, you know, if you're the smartest person in the room, change your room. You are the average of the five people you spend the most time with, but you get to choose who those five people are. So if you're listening to this podcast episode, thank you for deciding to spend that time with us. Hopefully we are able to help you. I mean, that's our goal here at Asian Efficiency. We talk about the core values all the time. Number one, glow green, become the best version of yourself, so that number two, you can pull others up. So hopefully we're able to do that.
Yep.
All right. So I've talked about how this whole idea of mind food is important if you're creative. That kind of leads into the next point here, which is that you have to have a system for collecting these good ideas. Like I said, you know, these signals are out there. We just have to notice them. And then once we notice them, it's not enough just to have that idea, because if you have that idea, that flash of lightning, if you don't write it down, then it's like it never even happened. Messed up where I got this quote. I think this might have been also Austin Kleon. It says, your job is to collect good ideas. The more good ideas you collect, the more you can choose from to be influenced by.
I like that one. As you're talking, I'm Googling to see. Yep, you're right. Austin Kleon. So there you go.
Yep, Austin's a smart guy. And there's a resource here, which I'll share. This is a little bit older. This was actually the first article that I did, I think, for Asian Efficiency on quick capture. But the idea is very evergreen. The idea behind this article and the other parts of this article show how I use a couple different tools to do this on both my Mac and my iOS device. But it comes back to David Allen, getting things done on the paper, off the mind. You don't want to waste your thinking time trying to remember what you were supposed to do. You don't want to let those ideas escape you, because that one idea could literally change your life. But if you forgot it, if you never wrote it down, if you didn't prioritize it, if you didn't care about it enough, then it's not going to do anything for you. So having a system where you can capture these things and go back and massage them and develop them and let them evolve later is going to be really important. So if you can get your mind clear by knowing that whenever I get an idea or whenever I get one of these inputs and I want to write it down right there so I don't have to forget about it, then you are able to see a lot more dots in order for you to connect.
So if I remember the article, the tools that you use for capturing were Drafts on iOS and NVAlt on the Mac. Is that still what you use?
Yes. NVAlt, I keep waiting for Brett Terpstra's BitWriter to come out, but it hasn't yet. Actually, you know, at this point, if Agile Tortoise, a developer address, were to come out with a Mac version of that, that would be pretty sweet, where it would sync via iCloud. I would consider using that. But NVAlt has been great. It's a very lightweight application. And I just need something where I'm going to jot stuff down. I have it set up so it syncs via Dropbox. And actually, in that series of articles, I walk through how I set that all up. And even though that's from 2014, the technical side of it is still the same.
Yeah, I'm pretty similar. I use Drafts on iOS as well. And if I'm sitting at the Mac, a lot of times I'll capture things straight to my OmniFocus inbox, even if it's not going to be a quote unquote task. The way I think of it to myself is, if I capture it there, then I know I will then do something with it from there, if you know what I mean. So that's, I also use NVAlt as well. I have an NVAlt document or whatever file, I guess you'd call it, or entry called Scratch. And so I just jot things down there. And then at the end of each day, I make sure whatever I capture to those two places, just to get it down, like you said, at the end of each day, I go through and just make sure anything that's actionable or reference or whatever, I've done something with it.
Yeah, NVAlt is a very flexible application. I know that some people will just keep every little bit of text that they ever record inside of NVAlt, and you could do that because you could have tens of thousands of text files that wouldn't take up any space on your computer, and it's very, very easy and quick to search in NVAlt and find what you're looking for. But I prefer, like you said, to just use it as an inbox, essentially, and then sort through all that stuff and put it in the right place. So for me, if I have an idea, I'm not searching for the podcast ideas note and then adding something to a list. I'm just opening up a blank note, podcast idea, colon, and then whatever the idea is, putting that in NVAlt, and then every once in a while going back through there and putting it in the correct place. Like you said, like a task manager, or actually a lot of that stuff will go straight to Confluence, because we've actually got a podcast space where we keep all of the podcast ideas and the roadmap for all the upcoming episodes and stuff like that. So that's usually where that would go.
Yep.
Cool. So there's a couple different sources of Mindfood, and we should highlight a couple of these because the idea here is, like we said, if you are the smartest person in the room, you need to change your room. and you are the average of the five people you spend the most time with. With technology, it makes it very, very easy to surround yourself with the people who are in the place where you want to be, who can help you get to where they are. All right. So there's a couple different things here which you can access, I would say, electronically, provided that you've tamed all of the noise that we've talked about. The first one, and the most obvious one, I think, is probably courses. There are a lot of online courses. We sell online courses designed to solve a specific problem. And courses can be great because they can significantly shorten the learning curve if you're looking for that specific outcome. So I know we could use a lot of specific examples here, but you could find a course on just about anything.
Yeah, I love digital courses for obvious reasons, because it's a lot of it is what I do. But I also want to throw a shout out for conferences and events, because sometimes it's really hard to replicate the concept of going somewhere and then you're kind of firewalling off your attention. You're not sitting there at your computer being tempted by a bunch of other things. You're there in a room, hyper-focused on this certain topic. So I actually really like, I mean, people say a lot of times conferences and events are all about the hallway conversations and the hallway track and the, you know, pub at the end or whatever, which is all great. But for me, I also really, really like going to an event and just being immersed in that subject. I get a lot of benefit from that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that I just added that to the sources here. I mean, it probably could fit under the next one here as well, but I think that you are correct that being in the same physical space with people is a little bit different than just connecting with people online, and there's a lot of value in that. So if you are able to find a conference or an event, that would be definitely beneficial and worth calling out separately from the next point then, which is the community. So sources of Mindfood, we've got courses, conferences and events that you just mentioned. Community is the next one. You know, here's that statistic that we've mentioned a whole bunch of times. You are the average of the five people you spend the most time with. So consider the groups that you are a part of and the people that you want to hang around with. And like I mentioned, this is why I think the dojo is so awesome, because you don't have to win the favor of the people that are in the dojo. You just have to show up, and everybody who's there has the same growth mindset. They're invested in themselves. So you get to connect with people like Gary Smith, who was on episode 140, and Kevin Clack, who his dojo module on efficient travel, as we're recording this, just went live, and he's on episode 168, I believe. Like, these are the people that are in the dojo and they want to help. So that's incredible. And that's worth the price of admission for a lot of people. Now, for some people who don't have that growth mindset, who don't understand and they haven't prioritized the value of eliminating all of the junk, like that's fine. You know, we're not going to be the solution for everybody, but for the people who want to invest a little bit and just get a higher signal to noise ratio, then the right community can really make all the difference. And it really depends on what specifically you're looking for. I mean, there are communities for every single niche that you can possibly imagine. And the internet gives you a place to connect with the people who are in the same situation as you, literally if they're all over the world.
Yeah. And that's one wonderful thing about the internet is no matter what you're focusing, there is somewhere out there that has your people. And usually it's not too hard to find it. Sometimes you do have to go to, say, a LinkedIn or a Facebook or whatever. One of the few good things Facebook is good for, other than me annoying my relatives sharing pictures of my kids, is those focused groups. There's a lot of groups out there, and Facebook makes that really easy to connect it. But there, it's not just there, lots of other places as well. But the thing is, you want to make sure you're going there and you're there for the connection and getting something out of the community. Just going there to complain about what's going on in your industry can be fun, but you're not going to get a lot of that mind food out of it.
Yeah, that's a great point. And one other thing I would add to just as a general tip for getting the most out of whatever community you happen to join would be this whole idea of give more than you take. The more value that you add, the more responsive people are going to be when you say, hey, I need help with this specific thing. Now with the dojo, myself, you, Tan, we try to jump in and help answer whatever question we see, but we also are doing a lot of other things. And so sometimes we don't get to that stuff immediately. You know, and I've noticed just by watching the interactions of people in the dojo that there are some people, especially on the forum, who will answer a whole bunch of questions, and when they have a question that there's usually a lot of people who, because they've helped so many people, want to give back to them. But if it's somebody brand new and they're saying, hey, you know, what's your general best productivity advice? Like those don't get answered as thoroughly or as quickly.
Right. Yeah. I think any community is like that. And it's not to say you shouldn't join a community and lurk if that's what you're comfortable with, especially at the beginning. But you will, like you said, you will find the quality of help that you get. Even like, you would be surprised. A lot of times people are intimidated, and I'm not just talking about the dojo here, any community. A lot of people are intimidated and think, oh, you know, I'm not an expert. I'm not as knowledgeable as all these other people. So they don't participate. But a lot of times everyone is an expert at least something. And even if you aren't as knowledgeable about the other people, sometimes just showing support and engaging, that can do a lot as well. And because everyone else is learning along with you. So nobody knows all this stuff, whatever the thing is in your industry.
Absolutely. I'm reminded of something that Sean McCabe had mentioned when he was on the podcast about teaching, because you don't need to be smarter than everybody to be a teacher. You need to be further along than one other person in order to teach. And I think that whatever community you happen to join, there's going to be those people who can benefit from the experience that you have. Maybe, yes, you aren't as experienced as that person over there, but that doesn't matter. That doesn't mean that you don't have anything to add. You don't have anything to give in terms of bringing value to the conversation.
Yeah, Katie in the dojo just brought up an awesome point, which is sometimes people don't only need the exact answer to their question. You can, what she says is, you can share something of your experience, and then that can spark an idea for them that does work. And that's so true. Sometimes it's just sharing experiences can have a lot of benefit.
That's a really good point. Yeah. So we've talked a bit about community. First two are courses, then conferences and events. The last one is content. So this, I would say, would be like blogs, books, and podcasts. We want to give you in the rest of this episode some of the things that have been influential for us, you know, what mind food we're feeding on. And since this is a podcast and you're listening to this right now, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that you obviously like the audio format. So we're going to be focusing on books, which you can also get as audiobooks, and podcasts specifically. All right. So we've got our top 10 books and podcasts. We're going to go round robin. So Brooks, then myself, and we're going to go five each. And Brooks, I will let you go first.
All right. This was such a hard exercise for me because there are some books that really, really impacted me. Like, for example, if I had to pick the two, it would be David Allen's Getting Things Done and Tim Ferriss's 40-Hour Workweek, or 4-Hour Workweek, I should say. But those are books that have been, you know, discussed to death. So I decided to kind of go a bit more off the grid for me anyway. And the first one that popped to mind was The 5 Dysfunctions of a Team by Patrick Lencioni. And one thing I learned about myself, which I didn't realize until going through this exercise, is I really respond well, apparently, to books that are kind of told in the form of a story or a fable. And so this book, he goes through and he basically talks about how there's a management team in a struggling company and they kind of get together and go through some challenges and they go through exercises and then, spoiler alert, they all come together. So I found this book really, really interesting because it made me think about things in my management career and working with others that I hadn't really thought of. And I thought of some of the dysfunctions that they mention. I had never really thought of things in that way before. So it was a really eye-opening book to me.
I completely agree. This is a great book. I absolutely love this book. I talked to somebody who had different feelings about this book, and that is because they worked in a corporate setting where their boss came in with a box of these, put them on the middle of the table yeah. and said, "Guys, read this because you're dysfunctional." Like, literally, that's what they said. And so I think, again, this is a great example of the different perspectives that you can have. Again, this is a book that anybody can pick up and read. In fact, last time I occasionally will go to the Half Price Books, which is just a couple minutes from my house, and just browse their business section. And I always buy as many copies of The 5 Dysfunctions of a Team as they have. And they have them every single time I go. And I give them out to people because it's been so influential for me. But yep. there's how you share something, and how you receive something is important, because the message can get lost even in the written words on a page, based on the other information that you are receiving at the same time. You know, the value of the 5 dysfunctions of a team can quickly get drowned out by a boss who is condescending and going to fix your problems for you.
Definitely.
Number two. So this is mine. I put Deep Work by Cale Newport. I think everybody in the dojo knows that I absolutely love Deep Work. I actually even created a Deep Work emoji. What do you call it? Emojicon? Emoji? Whatever. The little reactions that you can have. I uploaded a picture of the Deep Work book because I use this so often. But this book was completely transformational for me. The whole idea of deep work and just creasing your brain so that you can do it more easily, and then just the fact that you're showing up and doing it, that's building up this idea of career capital, which is an idea from another book. I don't want to steal your thunder, so I'll let you take it from there. But that really has gotten me to where I am today.
So this is hilarious because I changed my... So we're on number three now. And I changed my mind at the last second and I didn't notice that deep work was number two. So my number three is also by Cale Newport, same author, and it's called So Good They Can't Ignore You. And the reason that I really, really like this book is I also love Deep Work, by the way, but this book came to me anyway at a time when so much of the I was kind of in the process of leaving my corporate career, and so much of the kind of advice and you know, people I would follow online and stuff like that was all about, oh, you know, do what you love, follow your passion, follow your bliss, that sort of thing. And this book kind of came out of left field, and he said, basically the book is, no, you shouldn't follow your passion just because you like to do something. Success isn't going to follow you necessarily. I mean, sometimes it does, but he gives lots of good examples of when this advice of, oh, just do what you love and somehow it'll all work out. The way he says it is, no, what you want to do is get really strong skills, really focus on building up your abilities and leverage that, leverage your skills, leverage your excellence into something that you want to be doing, but you have this foundation so that you can create the kind of environment that you want versus just doing something because you love it and hoping it all works out.
Yeah. I mean, the basic idea here is something that Tan and I talked about not too long ago about developing the options that are available to you. The more skills that you have, the more options you have. You can name your price if you get good enough. So I really like this book as well. I've given this out a couple of times as well. The next book, number four, which is my pick, actually has a story that is a great segue from So Good They Can't Ignore You. At the very beginning of Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill, he tells a story of a guy who got a bus ticket, showed up at Edison's place, and was like, "I'm going to become your business partner." And Edison's like, "Well, I'll give you a job in the warehouse." And he became the best salesperson that he had, and eventually he did become Edison's business partner. And this book was influential for me because it really shows the power of your thoughts. I mean, there's more to it than just thinking the right things and believing that someday you're going to be a millionaire. But there's a lot of power in the affirmations and the things that you are saying to yourself. And that's the thing that I got from this particular book.
Cool. Yeah, that's a really great and powerful book. My dad tried to get me to read that book forever, and I always resisted. But eventually I caved. And it is a very good book. It's a good audio book actually to listen to if you're on a long trip or something like that. All right, cool. So my next book, we're on number five now, is almost a sneaky business book. I found, at least for me, it was like an underground business book in the sense that, and it's Creativity Inc. by Ed Catmull. And it kind of sucks you in, especially if you're like me, who's somebody who generally likes Pixar movies. And I kind of liked the idea of Ed. He was the president of Pixar, and his story of going from a tech guy to over time running this humongous company in conjunction with Steve Jobs and all that sort of thing. But what I didn't realize when I started reading it is it really is a great book for especially managing creatives, but managing anybody. And this kind of concept of encouraging failure, encouraging experimentation, creating collaboration, but where it makes sense, not just kind of BSing it, but kind of bringing people together who have skills that will work well together. And it turned out to me anyway, that it's a really great business book and a really great leadership book as well.
Yeah, this is a great book. I listened to the audiobook version of this, but I think it's something that typically with audiobooks, I try to listen to books that I don't anticipate are going to be very prescriptive. Like there's going to be a lot of things that I'll want to write down, but that was definitely not the case with this book because there's a lot of gold nuggets in here. And it paints an interesting picture of Steve Jobs as well.
Yep.
Number six is my pick, and that is The Obstacle is the Way by Ryan Holiday. This book, the basic idea is that don't get discouraged because you have a difficulty. That difficulty is actually part of the process for achieving the success that you are after. And just making that mental switch for me was pretty transformative where, you know, when something negative happens or something is harder than it should be, not getting all bent out of shape and saying, well, how do we fix this to make sure that this never happens again? And there are obviously some systems things where, you know, the three times rule, Asian deficiency, if something happens over and over and over again, you want to figure out how to fix it. But just because something popped up and you've got to work a little bit harder to overcome this obstacle, don't get upset about that, because that is actually part of the process. And a lot of times what that does is it develops you into the person that can that can achieve the success that you're after. A lot of times when you start off on the journey, if everything was easy, you're not going to be able to steward what you get at the end. And Ryan Holiday's approach to this is a Stoics approach where it's, you know, you're not viewing these things that are happening as good or bad. They just are. And kind of, as Sam Carpenter would put it from Work the System, you know, getting above and slightly outside the situation so you're not emotionally attached to the event that's happening. That's that was pretty important for me.
Yeah, I love this book too. And I had it on the audiobook and I went out right away and bought the physical book and gave it to my wife, and she really liked it too. And it's very rare that we're both, you know, kind of into the same book. So yeah, this is a book that can be very transferable to all sorts of different people. All right. So the next one is completely different than a lot of these things.
Yeah, I've never heard of this one.
Yeah. So this is a book called New Order, A Decluttering Handbook for Creative Folks and Everyone Else by Faye Wolf. And full disclosure, I'm actually mentioned in this book, so but that's not why I'm recommending it. just throwing it out there. That's not why I'm recommending it. But so it's a book on decluttering and kind of in the vein of a you know, the Marie Kondo type thing. But I really like the approach that Faye takes. And she's a professional organizer. She works with in Los Angeles. She's also a musician and an actress. She works with a lot of celebrities, but also quote unquote normal people as well. But the reason I like it is it's not a focus on how to make your home or your office perfect. And because a lot of these type of resources out there makes you feel like if your house or your office doesn't look like it should be on Pinterest or in a magazine, that somehow you're not doing it right. The approach that she kind of takes is that a lot of creative people find that they're blocked and they don't know why. And a lot of times it's because of their environment, whether it's their physical environment or just what's their mental environment, what's going on around. So she goes through a lot of strategies for how to get unblocked, but not in a way where you feel like everything has to be perfect. It's really focuses on getting started, doing what you can, making things not perfect, but just to start. And she has a phrase that she uses, which is a little better is a little better. And just making these kind of small, making things a little better over time will add up, you know, that very much that Kaizen approach. And so she gives a lot of really practical tips. So I'm not usually a big fan of these type of books, but I really, really like this one. And I mentioned it, so that's the important part.
I like that approach. I definitely had that reaction with the Marie Kondo book, that there's no way that I'm ever going to get to the level where she'd be happy with me. So I'm just going to put this down.
Exactly.
Cool. All right. Number eight, my pick is Essentialism by Greg McKeown. This is another very influential book for me. And it gave me the idea that it's okay to say no. the basic idea behind this book is fairly straightforward. But when you really start to think about how to apply this to your life, I think that that's really where the value comes, because he talks about how you can do all of these different things and you make a little bit of progress in all these different directions, or you could pick one thing and you could make a lot of progress in that particular direction. And that really got me thinking about what are the things that I really want to make progress on right now. By trying to do everything, I'm essentially doing nothing, and really just curating what I've committed to. Eliminating the things that really are not that important to me and making sure that I have the resources to invest in the areas that I know are going to create the future that I want.
Oh yeah, this is a good book too. I really, really love this book as well. Okay, so number nine for me is another pretty different one, but it's one that had a huge impact on me. And it's called Presentation Zen by Gar Reynolds. And at its most basic level, it's about doing presentations, how you structure presentations, how you do, you know, slides and stuff like that. But really, to me, what it really changed for me is anytime you're communicating information to somebody, whether you're standing up on stage doing a quote unquote presentation, or you're in a meeting, or you're just talking to somebody, it's really thinking about making yourself not the star, making the person you're communicating the information to, they are really should be the star of the show. And everything that you do should be built to serve those people. And I changed a lot about how I do talks and presentations and just communicate because of that book. And there's like a through line of a lot of, I guess, Japanese philosophy type stuff as well, which I really found interesting as well.
Nice. The number 10 book is mine. And this one is very different for me because it's really short and it's a series of small stories. This is Make Your Bed by Admiral William McRaven. And I first heard about this because he was on an Art of Manliness podcast and just really liked him and his story. I found out after reading the book that most of the stories that he shared on the podcast were verbatim from the book. The one in particular, I won't go into all the details and ruin it for people, but he tells one story about his Navy SEAL training where they were brought out to the middle of the courtyard and they were shown this big brass bell in the middle of the courtyard. And the instructor said, all you have to do is ring that bell and it's all over. All of the training, all of the early morning runs, all of the PT, like it's as soon as you ring that bell, you can go home. And the basic point was don't ring the bell. and there's like 10 different stories, I think, like that, which are just anecdotes of his experience, which, you know, if that military culture resonates with you, you'll get a lot out of it. If not, maybe be a little bit harder to draw the parallels, but there's a lot of really good stuff in there. And like I said, it's a very short read, so definitely recommend that one.
Cool. I wasn't familiar with that one.
All right. So those are our books. Now let's get into the podcast. And the one rule I had here was no picking the productivity show. So Brooks, you can go first.
All right. So like I mentioned, a large number of podcasts that I listen to, I'm ashamed to say, are either soccer or Doctor Who related. That says a lot about me, but I do have a lot of favorites as well. And one podcast I love is called Hardcore History. If I had to pick one podcast, that's probably my favorite. It's called Hardcore History by Dan Carlin. And these podcasts are it's usually a series because they get so long, but it's always on one particular aspect of history, but it goes into it with sometimes 4 or 5 hour long episodes about this topic. And so this is one podcast that I listened to at 1.5 times, but the research that he does and everything about it is really, really fascinating. And what I really found by finding this podcast and binge watching or binge listening, I should say, is it's amazing the parallels of some of the things he's talking about that happens in, you know, whatever Sumeria or something like that, or in Mongolia in the time of the Khans or something like that. So many things end up paralleling things that are going on right now. So it's really, really fascinating. So if you're into history at all, definitely check out Hardcore History.
Yeah, this is one of that I've heard a lot about. Like you said, the episode lengths were enough to deter me.
Yeah, no, I hear you.
it's been one that's on my radar for a while. I periodically will go through and curate my podcast, though, because I always have too many to listen to. And I want to make sure, you know, the whole episode here is on Mind Food, making sure that I'm picking the ones that are adding the most value. Yep. And that obviously kind of motivates me against just trying something completely new. But I may have to give that a shot because you're not the first person who's recommended that for me. Number two, this is a new one for me. This is 10X Talk with, I always mess up this guy's name. I think it's Joe Polish and Dan Sullivan. Dan Sullivan is really the guy that I listen to this for, though. He is the guy behind the Genius Network, if you're familiar with that. Just a really, really smart guy. He's written a bunch of books, but the Genius Network is a network of really top level CEOs who pay a lot of money a year to go to these events that Dan puts on. And really the fact that they're connecting with all of these other really high functioning, high level growth minded CEOs, like that's the value that's added there. But just an example of the kind of stuff that is in here. One of the episodes that I listened to, they had the guy from, I forget the guy's name, but the CEO of Whole Foods talking about his business model. A recent episode talked about how 10xing your business is actually easier than 2xing your business, because when you are thinking in terms of 10x, you have to work backwards from there. You have to change what you're doing. When you're looking at 2xing or doubling what you're doing, you try to manipulate the things that you're currently doing. But when you're just trying to exponentially grow, you go back to the drawing board and you think, well, what do I have to do in order to get these results? So almost every episode that I listen to, there's a couple of those aha moments where it's like, wow, I never really thought of it that way. And Dan Sullivan is definitely successful enough that you listen to him when he shares those things.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, I wasn't familiar with that one, so I'll definitely have to check it out.
Asian efficiency friend Brandon Wentland is actually the one who tipped me off to that one.
Nice. Cool. Okay, so the next podcast, number three, is actually the person who tipped me off to my number one hardcore history, and that is the Tim Ferriss Show. So a productivity podcast wouldn't be valid unless there was at least one Tim Ferriss mention. And the Tim Ferriss Show is not something I listen to every episode for sure, but I kind of pick and choose the ones that look interesting or I should say seem valuable. But one thing I really like, there's a few things that I really like about Tim Ferriss is, first of all, the people he gets on are generally whatever the area, whether, and it's a wide area as well. So there's a lot of things on fitness, on business, on finance, on personal development, spirituality, like a wide range of guests he has on there. And so I like it for the topics, which a lot of times are, I find really valuable, but I also like studying how he interviews and how he prepares for interviews and that sort of thing. Cause I'm always fascinated by people who do interviews, as you're probably going to see soon. So this is something that, that I really enjoy kind of watching it on those different levels as well.
Yeah, this is this had to be on this list. So he is definitely a very good interviewer.
Yep.
Tim's personality kind of rubs me the wrong way, but the content is so good that it almost doesn't even matter.
Yeah, I can totally understand that.
Number four is a new one for me. This is Hurry Slowly by Jocelyn K. Gly, who is the author of the Unsubscribe book, which I believe we gave away a bunch of those on the blog at one point. It's a very different take on a productivity podcast, and the people that she has on this podcast are very, very interesting. So, for example, there's only, I think, 6 episodes. Episode number 2 was Jason Fried, the CEO of Basecamp, and the most recent one was Austin Kleon about pencil versus computer. So very, very interesting. One of the things I got from that particular episode is that Austin actually has different desks for his different modes. He's got a digital desk and an analog desk. And I don't know, it's just a really interesting take on intentionality and focus, really, is was the whole idea. And breaking out of this busyness culture, which is what a lot of people think of when they think of productivity, is just cramming in more stuff into your day, but that's not really the case. It's making sure that you are doing the right things in the right way.
Nice. Yeah, I've seen a lot of kind of chatter about that. A lot of people have been talking about this one, so I have it on my 2 subscribe list, but I haven't actually checked it out yet. So I definitely will have to now. Okay, so for me, number 5 is a different one. It's by The Economist, and it's called The Week Ahead. And one thing I like about it is the episodes are short. They're rarely more than 15 minutes. And instead of talking about what's been happening in the world news this last week or whatever the newest hot button topic is, what they do is they talk about things that are upcoming in the week ahead, as the name implies. And so it's not kind of reactive, hot take news, which I can't stand these days, but it's more just, I just find the topics very, very interesting. And it's a good way to kind of quickly be informed of the big picture things that are happening in the world without spending all your time, you know, getting angry at news websites or something like that. I really like it. For me, it's a great balance.
I love the whole idea behind that. I mean, I've never listened to an episode, but I think there's a ton of value in choosing how you're going to invest your attention for the week coming up instead of just reacting to what's happened.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Cool. So that's number five. Number six for me is the Sean West podcast. Sean McCabe was actually on the Productivity Show in episode 163. And I met him when I went to the Sean West conference, not this year, but last year. And I just have a ton of respect for Sean McCabe. He is one of the smartest guys I think I've ever met. And he's his podcast is very well researched, and he shares a lot of experience from how he runs his company. And so there's always, I think I have the same mindset as Sean in a lot of different areas. So I understand when he's talking about specific things like that's, I frequently get aha moments when listening to him, you know, to describe a particular business problem that they're solving or something like that. A couple of the episodes that I really liked, there was one on communication where the big idea I got out of there was that the onus on communicating the message is on the sender, not the receiver. So if you've got kids, you know this, you can tell your kids, pick up your room, but just because you said it doesn't mean it's going to happen. If you embrace that mindset though, with everybody that you communicate with, and you really are intentional and focused on what signal you're sending, I've found that what you're trying to communicate gets communicated a lot more clearly. So a lot of value I get from that particular podcast. And like I said, it's episode 163. If you want to take a listen to that, you'll be able to tell right away what the Sean West podcast is going to be like.
Awesome. Yeah, we'll check that out. Okay, so number seven for me, and I really could not have a list of podcasts without mentioning this one. And it's Mac Power Users, and it's by David Sparks and Katie Floyd. And this kind of goes back to the mind food and the sharpening the saw concept. Is a lot of what I do personally is with technology, and a lot of our audience and a lot of the tools I use are Apple related products, whether it's Mac OS or iOS. And I've listened to a lot of technology podcasts over the years, but the ones I keep going back to, and I don't listen to every single episode anymore, but I kind of hit the highlights, is Mac Power Users, where they do a really good job of doing a deep dive into different technology related subjects. And there's always a theme for every episode, but at the same time, they keep it accessible. So you don't have to be a technology nerd to get a lot out of it. And I find it really, really helpful whenever there's, say, a big new operating system or hardware release. I'm always interested to hear what they say, the big kind of picture feature. So I've listened to Mac Power Users for years and years and years. I was on an early episode, and I still like it.
I did not know that you were on an early episode. I'll have to go back and dig that up, but I've listened to this for a long time too.
Yeah, no need to go back and look. It's okay.
All right, so number eight for me, and this is one that I mentioned already. It's the Art of Manliness podcast. I believe it's Brett McKay. I don't actually listen to every episode that gets released by this one. I think they're weekly episodes. But Brett is another guy who is really good at interviewing, and he has really interesting guests. So like I said, this is where I found out about Admiral William McRaven. He's had a lot of different authors on here, a lot of different people in a lot of different areas. And Brett is probably a lot like Tim Ferriss in that he seems to be an expert in all of these different areas before he does the interviews. He just seems like a very, I guess, well-rounded, but I don't know. I guess he just has a lot of different experiences. And the thing I like about this particular podcast is that those experiences come through as he does the different interviews. So it's not like he is just reading off of a script, asking the questions that the interviewer wants to hear and communicating the same old thing that they say over and over and over again. You can kind of tell, like, he's not the John Lee Dumas asking the same five questions. He's going off script, and it feels very organic. And every single interview that I listen to is very, very interesting.
Cool. And carrying on the interview topic is a kind of recent find of mine that is way more fascinating to me than I ever thought it could be. And it's called Here's the Thing with Alec Baldwin. So Alec Baldwin being the actor, and he does a radio show at WNYC in New York City, obviously. And so it's an interview show where he interviews people. And it turns out that Alec Baldwin is actually a really good interviewer. And so there's a lot of different subjects. There's a lot of entertainment, obviously, but sometimes it's politics, sometimes it's just different kind of social topics, sometimes it's just different things going on. And yeah, just because he's been in the business for so long and he knows everybody and he kind of knows all those types of aspects, he kind of asks people questions. He doesn't just ask he doesn't just ask the nonsense questions that these people have been asked 5 million times. He can do if he's talking to a director, they can do a deep dive talking into the nuts and bolts of directing and stuff like that. And I'm always, one thing about me is I'm always fascinated. Even if it's a topic I personally am not that interested in, I'm always fascinated listening to people who love their craft talk about their craft and talk about excellence in their craft. And so a lot of that comes through in this podcast. So this is a theme that you're hearing from us, but I don't listen to every single episode for sure. And that's one thing that people sometimes are hesitant to subscribe to podcasts because they feel like it's a big time commitment. But just because you subscribe to a podcast does not mean you have to listen to every single episode. So definitely recommend you not try to be a completionist and just focus on, like you said, that mind food.
Yeah, I couldn't have said it better. And I think that with podcasts specifically, we talked a little bit about the difference between these and books or audiobooks, at least in my own personal experience. I tend to listen to podcasts for entertainment. So the ones that I do listen to every single week, I do so because they're entertaining, but a lot of the ones that I listen to for entertainment do also have value. Like number 10 on my list here is Cortex. And I just really like the dynamic between Mike Hurley and CPG Gray of YouTube fame. But there's a lot of interesting stuff in here about how CPG Gray specifically works. At one point, he talked about how he had multiple iPads and multiple bags, which were set up ready to grab, ready to go at any given time. And he would grab a bag with an iPad and he would go from place to place to place throughout London. And he'd work for a few hours at his different stops. And I did that for quite a while, not exactly that format, not in London, but I embraced that idea of the location shifting and using the travel time as kind of a mental reset before diving in again. When you got to a new location, I would go from my house to a coffee shop to the library. Like I had these different different places. I had like this circuit in essence that I would go throughout my my workday before I have an office in the co-working space. But there's a lot of value in this, and we've talked about this in the dojo with people in the dojo. Katie, I know we had talked about this previously. Katie had to leave, but she was listening live in the Slack channel. And I think that this is something that if you've never tried it, like there's a lot of value in this. And we've got actually a dojo module, which is coming up kind of on this topic. I won't share any more spoilers, but this is an interesting podcast, to say the least. The thing that makes this easy to listen to every single episode is that technically it is a bi-weekly podcast, but I don't think that they consistently release every 2 weeks. I think they definitely miss some scheduled releases.
Yeah, I just started listening to Cortex because of your recommendation. And yeah, I love it. It's great. I just finished finished listening to their review of the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. and I've never heard of a more mass, which actually is a book I quite liked, at least an audiobook, but I've never heard a more masterful takedown of a book as what those two did. It was so interesting, but also so entertaining. I was laughing my head off. So it's very well done.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the points that they made, I listened to that episode as well. I personally love that book, but a lot of the points that they made, I found myself agreeing with them as they were making their arguments during their podcast.
Exactly. I threw out into the dojo for the people who are listening live some recommendations that they had that we may not have mentioned. And Heather mentioned a book called Leverage Leadership, which I'm hoping I picked the right one, is by Paul Bambrick Santoyo. So that's one that she really liked. Also, Multipliers, How the Best Leaders Make Everyone Smarter.
That's a great book.
By Liz Weissman. I haven't read that one. Also by Greg McEwen well. So I haven't listened to that one, so I'll definitely check it out. And Happier Podcast by Gretchen Rubin. So those are some other options from people in the dojo.
Awesome. And if you have any suggestions or you want to critique our top 10 lists, please do that in the comments. We want to know what you guys are listening to and what has been influential. And we want to build up our mind food lists, always looking for good books and good podcasts. So definitely let everybody else know what you think should have been on our list.
Yeah, or hit us up on Twitter at Asian Efficiency and just let us know some books and podcasts that you like as well.
Yeah, and actually the Productivity Show has its own Twitter handle now. It's at ProductivityFM. And if you were to send a tweet with the hashtag AskTPS, we will hopefully be doing some follow-up with whatever productivity questions you want answered. So if you want to hear your question answered on the Productivity Show, then send a tweet with the hashtag AskTPS. That will go to a Google Doc, and we will try to answer those live on the show. If you want to expand your horizons and find a steady diet of mind food that can help take you to the next level personally and professionally, check out the Dojo. The Dojo combines content, courses, and community all in one convenient package, giving you a steady diet of mind food that can help you get to your ideal future even faster. You get access to a private video training library with new courses that are added every single month, as well as a supportive community which can help hold you accountable and help you reach your goals faster than you ever thought possible. And the best part is that you can try out the Dojo for only $1 by going to theproductivityshow.com/dojo. This is a special offer just for podcast listeners, and it gives you access to the entire Dojo, including the full training library, for just $1 for your first month. After that, it's just $29 a month, and you can cancel at any time. So if you want to get access to myself, Brooks, Tan, and the rest of the Asian Efficiency team, we'd love to have you join us in the dojo. Again, the URL for that special $1 offer for your first month is theproductivityshow.com/dojo. You can find links to everything that Brooks and I discussed in the show notes by going to theproductivityshow.com/170. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next Productive Monday.